Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll hear about a school district in northern Wisconsin that built the first K-12 fabrication lab in the state and how it's transformed the way kids are learning.
First, President Trump's remarks in Puerto Rico have become a PR challenge for the White House. The island territory was devastated by Hurricane Maria, and most of it remains without power.
During his visit, the president made comments about the severity of the disaster that some criticized as being tone deaf.
Now, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack because we've spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. We've saved a lot of lives. If you look at the every death is a horror. But if you look at a real catastrophe like Katrina, and you look at the tremendous hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that died, and you look at what happened here with really a storm that was just totally overpowering. Nobody's ever seen anything like this. Now, what is your death count as of this moment? 17?
16 certified.
16 people certified. 16 people versus in the thousands.
The president followed up his visit to the U.S. territory with a stop in Las Vegas. The mass shooting there, which killed at least 59 people and injured over 500 others, has relaunched the national debate on gun control.
You can share your thoughts on either of those stories by calling now at 800-642-1234 in our weekly look at national news.
Scott Wong is a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he focuses on Speaker Paul Ryan and House Republicans. Scott, welcome back.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Well, Scott, can you recap yesterday's presidential visit to Puerto Rico? What happened?
Well, I think many people are calling it a bizarre, unconventional visit. Some might call it a PR disaster. There were several interesting storylines here. You mentioned a few of the comments that the president made, saying it was really nothing and not as bad as a real catastrophe like Katrina. I think a lot of Puerto Ricans and folks watching the Puerto Rico crisis unfold on TV were looking for sort of a healer in chief to visit the island to draw attention to the needs to learn more about what people actually do need in terms of food and water and electricity. We didn't really hear about any of that. There was a large focus on his dispute, the sort of war of words with the San Juan mayor, Carmen Yulin Cruz. President Trump, she's the woman who has been saying on national TV that people are dying here in Puerto Rico and the president is not doing enough to help. At the roundtable, televised roundtable hosted by President Trump, the mayor was invited, but he did not single her out for any praise, even though he singled out most people around the table for praise, and did not let her speak at this roundtable, even though she has sort of become the face of the Puerto Rico crisis. So there were a number of very interesting developments during the course of this several-hour visit. Of course, the lasting image we have is of the president passing out paper towel rolls to some folks, and it looked as if he was shooting the paper towel rolls into a crowd as if he were shooting a basketball. It was a very bizarre thing to watch.
How would you compare that visit to the president's response to the hurricanes in Florida and Houston?
I think he got fairly good remarks after his visits to Florida and Houston. Of course, he was with a number of Republican lawmakers from those regions. There weren't any, gaffes that I can remember. That's why this visit to Puerto Rico seems so strange, is because he had been through this before and actually had seen some of his approval numbers rise based on the handling of these crises in the Houston region and South Florida region. So I think it left a lot of people scratching their head. Of course, and this is sort of what we've come to expect from the president. You never really know what to expect or what he's going to do at any given moment.
Let's take a closer look, if we can, to some of the references the president made to fiscal matters. He mentioned the amount of money the U.S. had spent on recovery efforts and aid to Puerto Rico. He also mentioned debt. Can you walk us through some of those remarks that he made?
Yeah, he made some comments in regards to wiping out, like we need to wipe out Puerto Rico's enormous debt. And of course, this is an island, a U.S. territory that has been plagued for years and years by debt. The local economy is not doing well. And I think that stoked a lot of confusion. Some of his administration, his top administration officials today, had to sort of walk those comments back because, you know, we're talking about billions of dollars in debt, and you can't simply wipe that away. That would not be favorable to Republicans on Capitol Hill, who believe that you know they're willing to extend a hand to Puerto Rico, but they don't want to simply wipe that slate clean. The other dollar figure that we saw this week has to do with funding for these types of hurricanes that we saw in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico. And the White House sent up to Capitol Hill a request of just about $30 billion of aid for those three regions. This would be money to help replenish the FEMA coffers that very soon, because of these storms, will go dry. And so there is a need to make sure that those coffers are full, so that as FEMA begins to execute its plan to help these regions, they have enough money to draw from.
We're talking national politics now with Scott Wong, a senior staff writer at The Hill. And this week saw a horrific mass shooting in Las Vegas at a country music festival. And Scott, there have been various takes on this politically, mostly Republicans saying this isn't the time to be talking gun control. Democrats saying this is yet another reason to be talking gun control. Politically, what is the unfolding story there?
I think unfolding is the key word. I just in recent minutes, just at the last vote series, I was talking to a number of Republicans about this Las Vegas issue, specifically having to do with, this issue of bump stocks. These are the devices that the shooter in Las Vegas used to essentially turn his semi-automatic guns into fully automatic weapons. And that allowed him to discharge that many rounds very quickly in such a short amount of time, in such quick bursts of gunfire, and eventually allowed him to inflict as much damage as he done with about 58 or 59 dead and more than 500 people injured. So what we're hearing actually from some Republicans, a handful of Republicans on Capitol Hill, is that they are open to banning these devices known as bump stocks. That is a change of heart from, I think, what we had been hearing from Republicans in the immediate aftermath of that tragedy, where the two parties were sort of backing into their respective corners on the gun debate. Usually we hear Republicans say that they, you know, this is really a mental health issue and this has nothing to do with guns. Democrats, of course, and we saw Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman who was shot back in 2011. She stormed Capitol Hill a day after the event and said this has everything to do with guns. This is exactly why we need to have this gun debate and why Congress needs to take action on gun reforms to prevent more tragedies like this one. So there's a little bit of movement, and I think that's something that's different this time around compared with other tragedies regarding guns that we've seen in the past.
And as you said, some unfolding storylines going on politically there, bump stocks being one of them. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has also had this to say about the potential of gun legislation after Las Vegas.
Yeah, I think it's particularly inappropriate to politicize an event like this. It just happened within the last day and a half. It's entirely premature to be discussing about legislative solutions, if any.
So, Scott, in light of some movement here and maybe some areas of bipartisan agreement, is the majority leader changing his stance at all?
Neither the majority leader nor the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, have changed their view on gun control. They believe that this is not a gun issue, a gun matter. We heard Speaker Ryan earlier this week say there's, you know, oftentimes in these cases, these gunmen have a history of mental illness, and he believes that's the case this time, although there are still a lot of details about this individual that we don't know. And so, you know, that basically Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell over on the other side of the Capitol, they are ultimately the ones who control what goes to the House and Senate floors. And without any sort of buy-in from those two leaders, nothing is going to happen. That being said, like I said before, it's very interesting that we have seen, we saw the first member, Republican member of Congress today that I reported call for a ban on these so-called bump stocks. That was Bill Flores, actually conservative member of the GOP conference on the House side from the state of Texas. He was formerly the Republican Study Committee chairman, a very conservative individual. And I asked him if he himself owned guns, and he said he in fact did. So he's a gun owner from Texas, former chair of the Republican Study Committee, who is calling for a ban on bump stocks.
Scott Wong is with us now. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill, and we're rounding up the top stories from Washington this week.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from Congress, if anything, in response to the shootings in Las Vegas? Do you want to see efforts, limited or otherwise, on gun control? Or do you think, like Senator McConnell, this is not the time to be talking about that? Also, what did you think of the president's remarks and reactions to the Puerto Rico hurricane relief effort? You can join us now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We'll get to your questions in just a moment here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Right now, we're recapping the week's top stories with Scott Wong. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. How do you think lawmakers should be reacting to the gun control debate right now? What did you make of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's remarks on President Trump, as reported in July and earlier today? Call in now at 800-642-1234.
And let's take a caller now. We have Brian with us in Amro. Brian, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up?
Well, I just heard that Mitch McConnell said that it's not time to talk about gun control or sensible regulation. When is the correct time? When, you know, some of his family members get slaughtered, or instead of 59 people getting killed, how about 259? Is that the right number? I mean, what are we waiting for?
Brian, thanks for that. And that is a perspective that some people are voicing right now. Other people saying, no, this is a time for thought and prayer. Politically, is there a right answer to this right now, Scott, or just the way Congress functions in terms of bringing up issues after a tragedy?
Well, I think Brian was mentioning or echoing rather a comment that we heard this week from Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly is the husband and the astronaut hero of and who is married to Gabby Giffords, the former congresswoman who was shot in a mass shooting back in 2011 in Tucson, Arizona. And Mark Kelly was basically speaking for Gabby Giffords and saying, you know, when is the time, if not now, just after 58 people were gunned down and murdered, and all they wanted to do was to enjoy some country music on a you know, beautiful fall night. And so this is a scene that we've seen before after mass shootings around the country in Tucson and Aurora and Orlando. What happens oftentimes is that the members of the House and the Senate will join together in a moment of silence and then back into their respective corners on the gun control issue. And usually not a lot gets done. Of course, we all remember what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary when the 21st graders and teachers were gunned down by a deranged individual in their own elementary school. Many people thought that was the moment that would propel Congress to take some kind of action. There was the Manchin-Toomey background check bill in the Senate that received 55 votes, but of course, everyone knows you need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster in the Senate, and so while it had a majority in the Senate, it fell short of the 60 and failed. And many people lost hope that if Congress could not come together as Republicans and Democrats after 21st graders were gunned down, then when could they ever come together on gun reform?
Thank you for that call, Brian. And one more quick call from Jim in Superior. Jim, hi.
Yeah, hi. My problem is that everybody keeps blaming inanimate objects. And I'm a gun owner. I own high-capacity magazines. I'm a sports shooter. I'm a hunter. Not once has any one of my guns or magazines or any of my ammo, for that matter, ever opened my gun case, loaded themselves, and fired at anything in any way, shape, or form. Yes, these are very tragic, horrible things that happen. These people are bad people. The people that are doing it are the bad people. The weapons have nothing to do with it. Now, bump stocks, just to add this in quickly, bump stocks do not make a weapon fully automatic. Bump stocks merely add the rate of fire increases. It still does not a fully automatic weapon.
Jim, thank you for your thoughts. Scott, anything else to add before we move on?
No, I would just say that Speaker Ryan noted that Congress last year passed a mental health illness bill sponsored by Tim Murphy of Pennsylvania that would add funding to help people with mental illnesses. But of course, here we are, 7 months later, and we are still facing another tragedy. The speaker said that bill is being implemented as we speak, and that's why we didn't see any noticeable difference. But again, Republicans are pointing to mental health illness funding as the way to prevent some of these tragedies.
Well, thank you so much for that call. And let's move on now and look at another story, which has been, in play for a little while since the summer, resurfacing now. An NBC News report said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson called the president, quote, a moron and considered resigning. And now Tillerson has been speaking out about that story. What has he said?
Tillerson held a press conference today and pushed back on this NBC News report, which basically said that earlier this summer he had called Trump a moron to some colleagues after a meeting in the Pentagon. It's an example of more turmoil within the Trump cabinet, I believe, and we have seen quite a bit lately with the resignation of Tom Price and other members of the cabinet under investigation. Tillerson and Trump have not always seen eye to eye, although they were close during the campaign. And Tillerson has come under some scrutiny for not having staffed up his State Department quick enough. Obviously, these are important roles, and the agency has seen some reduced funding and has not filled some key positions at Foggy Bottom, where the State Department sits, and around posts around the world.
Tillerson today, in speaking with the press, was very complimentary of the president. Said he hadn't been planning on leaving. He was committed to the president. Did not deny some of the more inflammatory remarks. But how would you say that their relationship, the president and Secretary of State, where does it stand right now?
I think it's very tenuous. If we look back at the past 7 months at the number of individuals, top individuals, who have been fired from this White House and from the cabinet, it's a very long list. It goes all the way back to Sean Spicer, the press secretary, and Reince Priebus, of your state, the former RNC chairman who was fired as chief of staff. Most recently, I would mention Tom Price, the former HHS secretary who came under scrutiny for taking private charter flights around the country and sort of mixing official business and personal business. at the taxpayers' expense, another member of the cabinet, Ryan Zinke, because they've now fired Tom Price, or Tom Price has resigned. It's sort of a slippery slope, because there are other members of the cabinet who also have used private jets for official business. And so there's an appearance, you know, it doesn't look good for the Trump administration, especially when Donald Trump is the guy who said, we're going to come to Washington and drain the swamp. Now he has key members of his administration who are billing taxpayers for the use of private jets and flying some of the top members of the Trump administration around the country. So there's an optics issue, clearly, that doesn't look good, and that's why we're seeing so many of these negative stories.
And Scott, one more quick story to touch on before we let you go. The Department of Justice released some memos about the rules underlying the appointment of relatives for the White House. What got revealed there?
Yeah, this was pretty surprising, actually. The Justice Department released this week a series of old, I would say decades-old memos concluding that presidents cannot appoint family members to political positions in the White House or in the administration. This was the case until this January, when the Trump administration took over and a DOJ official basically overturned those memos. That paved the way for the appointments of Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, Trump's daughter and son-in-law, to take positions in the White House. And it's created a big headache for his family members, given that they are now part of the White House. They're facing investigations and are under scrutiny, most recently for using private email accounts, perhaps for official business. And so there might have been a reason why in the past administrations had decided that they would not allow presidents to appoint their family members to key jobs.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Scott Wong's a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he focuses on Speaker Paul Ryan and House Republicans, joining us there for our weekly look at the latest in national news.